The White Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Heretics Hour on this Monday. What is today? January 14th, 2013. And the title of tonight's program is, well, the working title, Are You Being Psyoped? And I think it's supposed to be psyopsed from some things I've been reading. But I could also change it to just to what degree are we being psyopsed? Because I think absolutely that we are under quite a few psyop operations, and maybe kind of almost to the point of being in a general all the time distortion of what our reality really is, and is if we didn't have these things going, if we didn't have this kind of government that is trying to change everything that we're used to in our world. I'm sorry, I didn't really work out an introduction today, so I'm a little tongue-tied. For that reason, I should go right ahead and tell you that I have Hadding Scott here with me. Hi, Hadding.
Hello.
Sorry for that messed up introduction, but Hadding is here because I wanted to have somebody here with me, and a few people that I had asked again were not able to come on or didn't feel like they had anything to say. And so, but I wanted to talk about this particular issue what I've been talking about, Sandy Hook. I want to put it into a larger picture for us. And the thing is that Hadding doesn't really agree with the way I see it. And
that's right.
he'll be saying that. Yeah. So, but
probably
I think
we'll be saying it. Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. But I think that's good because, you know, he kind of represents to me the general public in that they don't see anything, you know, really out of abnormal going on. And it's kind of strange that he has that, he takes that position, but he takes it in quite a few areas. So we'll both be giving our views on this. Hadding, as we start out, do you want to say anything before I'm going to read a little bit about information warfare to open this up. And did you want to say anything first?
Well, I think I'm here to be skeptical and ask questions. You know what my position is. I just think that there's too much being made out of the Newtown shootings. It's 26 or 28 deaths in a particular incident. Compared to more than 14,000 murders per year in the United States every year, more than 14,000. So the lack of proportion to me is what's remarkable about it. I don't see any reason to believe that there's anything false about the incident itself.
All right. But the thing is, one thing is that In spite of the fact of being able to say something like that and it being reasonable in from one perspective, that's not the way it's played up. And the media doesn't play up all these other deaths that you're talking about, and deaths from medical practices, and deaths from automobile accidents, and deaths from all kinds of things. It just plays up things like this incident and the fact that it's that little children who, very young children who didn't have to be in any kind of danger, suddenly were put in danger. So, it's a great big story. And the other part of this is that the powers that be are gearing up now with renewed force. They've already been geared up for some time to tackle gun control and to implement some beginning gun control measures, which I'm sure they will present as, these are not going to hurt anything, these are not going to change anything, you're still going to be able to have guns, this is just, you know, to take away the worst of things. And this is the way they do things in this step-by-step process. You know, I mean, you should know. Everybody should know. They don't, but that the end goal is to the removal of guns entirely, just like they have in places like Great Britain.
Well,
so
yeah.
Sometimes
somebody like Dianne Feinstein will come out and say that that's the goal. That's what she would do if she could. And for that reason, people are suspicious of even small infringements, small encroachments. And they think it's the first step toward taking away all the firearms.
Well, it is. Now, what do you say about it? You think, well, you could go along with some small changes in the firearms laws?
I don't see a good reason for it. Just because of 26 more deaths out of a 14,000 plus death toll every year from murder. And, you know, that shooting spree in Oregon a few days before the one in Newtown, as I understand, was brought to a close because somebody there happened to have a firearm that was able to stop the criminal. You know, so we're going to infringe on people's rights to possess firearms. I don't think we have a gun problem. We have a race problem.
Yeah, that's right. But this discussion and debate is not going to take place on a reasonable level so that reasonable people can say, well, really, what would be, you know, would it be in our best interest to not have guns and so on? No, it is going to take place on an emotional level that they're going to put it on. The fact is that whether you can believe that they will go to the measure of pulling off actions like the Sandy Hook so-called massacre, or that's just totally out of the question. They would never do a thing like that. Now, I didn't want to get into Sandy Hook itself right away but I think we should make it clear that you have said you haven't paid much attention to it. You don't know much about it. And that's the problem with you saying it doesn't matter. Yeah, you say you're not interested. Well, if you haven't looked at it and seen all the really serious anomalies that stand up out like a sore thumb, then you really can't say that it's not very important.
Well, I listened to the reporting on the day when it occurred because I was trying to record Rush Limbaugh at the time. And then they interrupted it, and my microscopic study of Rush Limbaugh had to be aborted for that day, and I listened to the reporting on that instead. It was kind of amazing that they interrupted all regular program to spend hours speculating about what might be going on in an incident that only amounted to 0.5% of the murder toll for the United States for an entire year. But,
well, you know, you say that over and over, but why? Who were you listening to? What were you listening to?
I was listening to radio.
Station? Yeah, I know. What radio?
I was listening to WABC radio in New York City, and then I switched over to KOA Denver.
And so, what did you learn? So you're saying that you didn't learn anything?
Well, there were a lot of mistakes in the early reporting. I don't think that there was any conspiracy to cover anything up. It's just the case that when reporters are covering a story as it happens, especially when it's something very traumatic, they make a lot of mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when Reagan was shot and the reporter, the anchor on ABC News reported that James Brady had died. You know, well, what are we to make of that? Is the guy pretending to be James Brady now? Is he an imposter? You know.
Okay.
You just have to take into account that they make a lot of mistakes. And the police themselves who give the information to the media, they don't always know exactly what's going on right away. They make mistakes.
Okay.
That one guy that was arrested. Oh, you know, first they said it was Ryan Lanza that was the shooter. Because apparently Adam Lanza had his older brother's ID or something. Well, and they had this guy that they apprehended in the woods.
Yeah, but see, all you know is the very beginning reports having.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot that has taken place since then. A lot of information, a lot of input and output from people. And, you know, there's a lot of information. So just to talk about naturally you can say, okay, they made some mistakes, but these mistakes go on and on, pretty serious. So what I'll do, and I want to remind people that this program is not to be just between Hattie and I, since we'll just kind of argue it without too much of a good outcome. So I want to remind you that you can call in, but it is, you do need to really wait until the second hour. So think up, you know, keep track of your thoughts and things you want to say or comments or whatever, and save them up until the second hour starts. And that number is 1-830-443-4911. I just adjusted my sound. You can also send me an email. I'm looking at my email account right now, carolyn@carolynyager.com. You know, because of what we're saying, I'm going to have to move to what I was going to kind of wait on, but some important statistics or important facts about Sandy Hook, Hattie. Okay, so the one is that out of the children, 20 children were killed, 21 children were shot, and 20 were killed. That is an outstanding record that has never been reached before in any of these kind of events. And this by supposedly a young man who was kind of maladjusted, supposedly, again, and was very slight. He was tall enough, but they say he weighed about 120 pounds at the most. So, and he was not an expert on, even the stories that they say that they made up, that his, even though his mother had some guns and she wanted to be able to protect herself and she did go and do target shooting, there's no evidence whatsoever that he went, or that if he went that he was doing any target shooting, or that he did it more than once or twice, that he was, you know, that good with guns. So that's one thing that doesn't add up as to one guy went in that school and shot, did all this shooting. Then there were six teachers, too, who supposedly died in this. And this is not too important. There was 300, that's something else. Okay. Parents, the parents have been gagged. They cannot talk. Well, there's a usual thing. There's no dead bodies. Nobody has seen any dead body. Nobody has seen nobody has seen the crime scene. And here's the worst thing, Hattie, which you're probably not aware of. You know, nobody has been able to go into those rooms. And these were high velocity bullets in this big Bushmaster rifle that were being shot all over the place. And people say that these bullets would have gone through walls, that, you know, the walls would have been all pockmarked with bullets and so on, gone through windows, all over the place, but nobody can go and see it. And now the Newtown city officials, this was just yesterday at noon, around noon, it broke out, are convening to discuss demolishing the Sandy Hook Elementary School. Mm-hmm. And this Patricia Lodra, the new select woman, said that in addition to the communities, well, meetings, they're going to talk to the families and so on. But they want to finalize that. What they're going to do is this started floating some time ago, maybe a week ago or so, this idea that this school ought to just be torn down. And so they would be destroying the evidence just like they did with 9/11 and with some German death camps during, you know, connected with Holocaust and destroying the crematories and so on, destroying evidence so that nobody will ever be able to see that that school doesn't have the scene in it that they are saying that it had. Okay, and then, now, I don't know how you'd answer that. And then you have this mother and this son, and of course the mother was murdered too, supposedly by him. But the father, and so that she couldn't defend her son or say, you know, contradict what they're saying about him. But the father and the older son say nothing in defense of their mother and brother. You know, they've just accepted it and they won't say a word. The older son never said anything from the beginning, except that it wasn't him.
Yeah.
But the big thing, you know, There's some little other items I've got that, but they don't really fit this, what I'm saying now. So how do you, you know, when they will refuse to show, when they've got, you might not know that all these families now have a police, person, assigned to them in order to, keep reporters and everything away from them. And they're not supposed to, you know, they're discouraged from talking to anyone. And if they have given any interviews, they've been to these ABC or CNN or something like that, who they top people, who they, you know, top news people who they know will go along with it, Katie Couric and so on. And they don't want them just talking freely. And they say that this investigation is going to take 2 or 3 months before they can, you know, allow anybody to see the, you know, the crime scene or anything. They're still studying how many bullet holes there are or something, and how many bullets they find, and they're trying to do all this arcane stuff. But by then, they will have decided to just to tear down the building. So doesn't that, you know, is that just something that just happens normally? And
well, I think they must have a lot of money to spend on police in that community, which is not too far-fetched, because this Lanza family was getting, I think, $250,000 in child support for Adam Lanza there when he was underage. So these are very wealthy people in a wealthy community, apparently.
Well, what difference does that make? Here's the thing about that community. Yes, it's, let me go back to where I was. It's, they were also saying that it was, that was mostly Jewish. I never did hear this, but I guess it was going around for a while that there are mostly Jewish children in that school, which is not true. But then they said, well, there's a lot of Jews in the community because it's a wealthy community, or because they know that there are a lot of Jews around that, in that whole neighborhood there. Still, you know, when they say a lot, they just mean whatever. But it was like they were trying to make out, somebody was trying to make out at some point that you know, Jews were victims here. But there was only one or two. There's one I know, only one that I know of the children that was Jewish. I don't know about the parents. I mean, the teachers. So that's kind of interesting. But just because there's a wealthy community and they have a lot of police, that means they can assign police to the family so that they won't talk to anybody.
Well, yeah, it would be expensive to do that. But something that I heard, I listened to an NPR interview discussion about this, and they said that one thing they were doing was to try to keep the families from being harassed by journalists.
Of course they say that.
Yeah.
Why do you, you know, you are believing the mainstream news. And, you know, how can you believe the mainstream news on some things and not on other things? That's the thing that a lot of people do. They'll say, oh, I know this is fake, and this, you know, this is a hoax, and this didn't happen. But, oh, but these other things, no, they're just right, you know, and we can believe what they're telling.
Well, what's your explanation for why they have a policeman signed to every family?
I just said, so that they won't talk to anyone.
Well, you think that they can prevent them from talking to anyone?
They can discourage them very much if they've got that police person there all the time.
I don't think they can stop
them
from talking
to
anyone. When the 3 months are over, those people can sing like birds anyway.
Well, yeah, but, you know, these people, it's true, there's a lot of unanswered questions. Another thing that to me does make some sense is that there was a drill, a drill for just what happened at the Sandy Hook school in Bridgeport. I don't have the name of that drill written down here, but it was something about how to take care of children in a, you know, terrible crisis emergency or something in schools. And it was going on in Bridgeport, which is only 19.2 driving miles away. That's nothing. I mean, that's like right next door in Texas. So that's very close. And those people in that drill could have come over to Newtown and created a lot of what was going on there. You haven't probably looked at all the video of the school and the fire station on that day at that time, where all the activity was at the fire station, not at the school, that you don't see ambulances or anything at the school. Another thing is that they left those kids, supposedly, this is the last word anybody I've heard from anyone, they left those kids in that school building until nighttime. And in the middle of the night, they took them off in ambulances, supposedly, to the coroner's office. And the only people that had been in there were the coroner and the police, and they didn't allow any medical people, emergency medical people in. And when it first happened, emergency medical showed up there and wanted to, you know, go in and help, and they wouldn't let them in. And they gave the reason later that, well, everybody was dead. Yeah. And there was nobody to give any medical help to. And they carried two kids out. Two different policemen carrying a child in their arms out of the building, and they went to a hospital, and these two died at the hospital.
Uh-huh.
But none of that is as it should be. And yet they've kind of intimidated these parents somehow into not, you know, making any noise. And they also didn't allow the parents to see their children. They didn't allow the parents in. They didn't put line the children up somewhere and let the parents go and see their child before it was taken away. They said they looked too bad. They keep saying that they had wounds in their faces and so on. But they just refused to, whether a parent wanted to or not. And they didn't get to go to the coroner's office either. They only saw their child, if they wanted to, after they had been at the funeral, after the funeral home had fixed mm-hmm. them up. So none of this is this real Big Brother stuff. I think it's absolutely, I wouldn't believe what they're saying for a minute. But, you think you can just overlook those things and say, well, because you said to me this afternoon, well, you think it's just a matter of things happen. Things like this can happen.
Well, you kind of threw that at me in an insulting way. And I said, well, that's the common sense position, is that things like this just happen from time to time. Yeah, once in a while you'll get a crazy person that'll do something crazy. And, that's life.
Yeah, but there's the evidence against this, Adam Lanza, is pretty non-existent. In fact, all the stories that they were telling in the beginning, trying to explain that he had a motive, have all been found to be untrue. You know, they were saying he had been a student at that school, and he now they say he was back when he was 6 years old or something, but that may have be a photoshopped school picture that they show, that's being shown with him in it. But even if he was, I mean, he looked like a normal kid at the time, and he wasn't there very long. And they said his mother was a teacher there, and that's why he went there, because he's mad at her, and he went to her room to kill, and he killed her, and all this stuff in the beginning, which none of it was true.
Yeah.
So they were trying to come up with, I don't know. I think, well, we get into too much detail there. I want to go back to how much we live in a environment of information warfare or psychological operations and so on. But you finish with what you want to say, if you want to say something about this evidence or non-evidence.
Well, I did look into the question of the other a suspect that was apprehended. I found out what his name was. His name was Chris Manfredonia. And he's 41 years old, and he's actually a physical education teacher at a high school, and he had a child in that school, and he just happened to be there when the shooting happened. So that's who the other suspect was. People make a big deal about that.
No, 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 no. You mean the person that they supposedly tackled and had down on the ground?
They had him handcuffed,
and
they put him in the car.
Are
yeah,
you sure
Chris
that
Manfredonia.
Was him?
Huh?
That was, I thought that was his car. That was that one of those cars was his that they were checking out and saying that it was Lance's car.
There was a guy named Chris Manfredonia.
Yeah, I know there is.
He was the one that was wearing the camouflage pants.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, that doesn't really change anything. That doesn't, you know, where's the picture? Where's the picture of Adam Lanza laying on the floor dead, you know, of a self-inflicted wound in the school outside or inside of Victoria Soto's classroom? Where is that? You know, no photographs were taken in there. We're not going to see any photographs of that crime scene at all, even if they say, because again, they use, oh, it's too painful for the families. It's too painful for the parents. We can't show any of this stuff. Well, it's the same thing they use with the Holocaust, as you know, Hattie. You know, you can't do anything now because it's too painful. You can't talk about it because it hurts these people. 60 years from then. But, you know, here, this is new. But you can't do that with crime. You can't say, you can't talk about it because it hurts the family of the people that were, you know, harmed in the crime. This is something new that they come up with now.
Well, I think there's a big difference between this and the Holocaust. The Holocaust is something that's supposed to have happened on the other side of the world, and there we don't have any.
Oh, the other side of the world. Why? Where do you come off with that? It makes a difference. I didn't mean to be this way. That it makes a difference. Say these things are the other side of the world, and this is in our country. What is the deal here? What is that supposed to mean?
It means it's hard to investigate. They ended up abandoning the gassing claims about the camps that were in Western Germany because civilians could go in there and check those places. They've only maintained those claims about the camps that were behind the Iron Curtain for a long time.
Okay, very good. So now what about here? We've got this right here. We can investigate it, but we're not allowed to investigate it.
Well, here's another difference. In the case of the Holocaust, we don't have not even a single name of a person that we know was gassed by the Germans. Not one. Not one. In this instance, as you just narrated, there are two children that were wounded at the scene and died at the hospital. Okay?
Well, supposedly. I mean, they were taken to a Danbury hospital, which is run by Yale University, I understand. And, you know, you can't, if you're going to believe that everything they tell you is all honest people, all telling you the truth, then, you know, you're kind of going to be, fooled because, we didn't see anything. Where are the pictures of anything? Nothing. Not one photograph of anything, Hattie.
Well, I don't know that no photographs were taken. There might be some released later. The police may have taken some photographs.
Well, they certainly should have taken photographs.
Yes.
They should have taken a lot of photographs. But I don't. Why would they be releasing all this stuff later? That's what they're saying. But you know, when later comes, they're not going to release anything unless they come up with some false stuff that they're going to release. Well, let's talk about finish what you're going to say.
I just don't see as much reason to doubt all this as you do. I don't see the, you know, there's a lot of manipulation that goes on of how the public thinks in the United States, but it's mostly through biased and selective coverage of things that happen, not through fabrication of events.
Oh, well, okay, let's look at this. This is something I found. It's on information warfare. I think I just found this morning. I thought it was pretty good, and I don't. It was written by Professor George J. Stein in 1995 already. An essay called Information Warfare. He's a professor. It was published in Air Power Journal in the spring of that year. It was approved for public release. I don't know. That's all the only information I have. You can find it at www.iwar.org.uk and then /war/resources/A. You have to Google it, I guess. George Stein, Information Warfare. So, where am I? Find my place here. He says, well, heck, where did that go? I lost my place, Hattie. There's this. Oh, it's above that. All right, here it is. Information warfare, in its largest sense, is simply the use of information to achieve our national objectives. Well, I just inject right here that it is national or administrative objectives, because every administration that gets in office decides on its own objectives. What are our national objectives? Some kind of vague things like, you know, democracy, peace, and, you know, making a peaceful world or something. I don't know what they are. But we do, every administration has objectives, and they create their government with their cabinet members and so on in order to. And one of Obama's objectives is gun control, and it's huge change in the country. I think you would agree with that. He's all about change. He wants to change the United States into a different kind of a place. So they use information to do this, like it goes on, like diplomacy, economic competition, or the use of military force. Information in itself is a key aspect of national power. Information warfare in this sense can be seen as societal level or nation-to-nation conflict waged in part through the worldwide interneted and interconnected means of information and communication. Well, we're dealing with societal level warfare, I would say, because they know that there are plenty of enemies that that they see a lot of the American people as terrorists or potential terrorists, as enemies. They've got lists and data and so on all of us, they don't want us causing trouble, and they would like to do it without force, you know, without open conflict with the people with the citizenry. So they use these kinds of things in order to the word is really demoralized, but to get people to kind of give up these ideas and go along with things little by little. And so that's one of their big objectives is to do this. You want to comment on that?
Well, this thing about citizens being regarded as domestic terrorists really dates from a booklet that was published by the Bush administration, George W. Bush. There's some booklet that they put out that's online that lists different forms of people to be regarded as domestic terrorists or potential domestic terrorists. Rand Paul said something about it a couple of years ago. But the thing is, that thing was put out in the heat of the war on terror, all right? And I think the ADL had some hand in it.
Oh,
some Jews did.
Are you going to try to say that this is no longer the case? Somehow they see us, they're not afraid of the American public anymore, and they're just going to... Are you going to say that?
That booklet is no longer available
from
the federal government.
Oh, it's not just one booklet.
It was discontinued by the Obama administration.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
It was.
That doesn't mean anything. It's no longer enforced just because they don't want the booklet out there. Right?
Well,
I mean, you think they're going to publish everything?
They're not promoting that idea anymore. I'll put it that way. You can't buy that book from the government at this point.
Okay. All right.
Get it free, however they were distributing it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go on here. Information warfare is about the way humans think, and more important, the way humans make decisions. And this is really what they're targeting, Hattie. You know, they're going after changing us. As I talked about this on Saturday, I guess it was, my brain's not working too well tonight. How they want to, I can't even think of how to word that. How they want to change the way our perception. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. Our perception of reality. And we're not even supposed to see ourselves as independent, self-reliant people and capable of running our lives and capable of defending ourselves and so on. No, we're supposed to see the new American person is going to be someone very passive and very dependent on their government and willing to turn everything over to the government and particularly their defense of themselves. And so the idea is that the American people don't need to have weapons to defend themselves because the authorities are prepared to do that. So we already see what these police look like. Look like something out of Darth Vader, and it's just going to get more so. So the less armed we are, the more we are totally helpless, just like kids in the grade school are. You know, the whole public will be this helpless. And you see a lot of these people in these stories from Sandy Hook, these parents, and I've seen some parents being interviewed who are saying that they want all guns to be. I don't know. This is where I think these people might be actors because it's just so unreal. Or they pick these people very specially. I don't know, but they are apparently parents of children who were killed. They want all guns to be confiscated. We don't need guns. The police are the only people that should have guns. They're actually saying this.
Well, and it's entirely likely that the mass media are selecting ones that are saying things that they want promoted. But it's also entirely possible that people in Newtown, Connecticut, that are pro-gun don't feel like discussing it right now.
Well, they're not asking those people either. And you're right. They're going to intimidate people forever from saying anything on the basis of this being these little children who were murdered. Why do you think they selected, and I'm not convinced that they were all murdered because I can't put my head around the idea that government and all the authorities who would be setting all this kind of psyop up would actually kill these little kids to do this, although it's possible. But if they didn't actually kill them, they want us to think they killed them because this goes to people in a place where they can't argue against it. You know, they can't say, well, this doesn't mean enough. Like you're saying, most people cannot do that. You know, I mean, because
it's a shame that people can't put things in proportion.
No, that's right, and they don't. But anyway, this goes on to say, and although information warfare would be waged largely but not entirely through the communication nets of a society or its military, they're always seeing the military aspect, but I'm trying to point out that what was one time military is now also is also carried out on the domestic scene. There's been some things lately where the military is allowed to now act on our national borders, within our national borders, and if it's a big enough an emergency, and a lot of things like that. So the demarcation that once was between citizens of the U.S. and foreigners is melting. You know, it's fading away. They're saying that they do it through the communication nets, and it's fundamentally not about satellites, wires, and computers, but it's about influencing human beings and the decisions they make. That's what keeps being repeated. And, you know, what this whole idea of psychological warfare is to simply influence people's minds and change the way they think so that they won't defend themselves against you. You know, you're trying to take down their defenses and cause them to be less of a threat to you when you want to go in and take over their country or, you know, their community or their freedom. So a major new factor in information war is the worldwide infosphere of television and broadcast news. Well, I said this was written in 1995, though that wasn't all that new, but it really, around in the 90s, it became much bigger, and we had cable. Whenever cable news networks started up and so on. So we had much more of this, and it's involved in television and broadcast news. They're totally in league with the government and with whatever agencies do this kind of work, you know, for the government. And it says, you know, they take the battle off the battlefield, and but you know, again, they would have to maybe fight the American people to get these things done. You know, there's this image of government coming around and, you know, invading people's homes and taking their guns. Well, they were doing something like that during Hurricane Katrina, weren't they? But they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. I think this is all run by globalists. But my opinion, I'll just say that right here, is that after studying this for a few weeks, that this is I really only been studying it for a couple of weeks, if even that, but I was aware of it, you know, from the beginning, and read about it a little bit. It shouldn't be called a false flag. It shouldn't be called a hoax. It should be called a psyop, you know, and who carries out psyops, but, it's a psyop of, our government, but our government being directed by the unknown globalist government that is running all our Western nations, or is influencing them very strongly. And this is, they have an agenda. Their agenda is to disarm all the people, as they've done a good job in many, many, many countries, in many places. But they have a hard nut to crack in the United States. Okay. And so they're going after it.
You sound a little bit like some patriot broadcasters that like to talk about the Bilderbergers and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission, the vast conspiracy, which isn't specifically Jewish, because a specifically Jewish conspiracy wouldn't be that vast.
Well, there are those groups, though, Hanning. I mean, you can't deny that there are those groups.
Yeah, and, but I don't think that members of the Council on Foreign Relations, for example, are consciously malevolent conspirators. You know, you're talking about...
Well, most of the people, they don't see themselves that way. Most of the people are just members, and they're impressed by the big names that are in there. But, you know, most of the people tell themselves, just like in Freemasonry, they would tell themselves that they're just a part of something, that they have good aims to help humanity and help the world and blah, 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 and do all this stuff. You know, if people can, and then they can ignore a lot of things that they might see, or they might not see it, because, and when I say the globalist, the unknown or hidden globalist government, I do mean a lot of Jews, and I do mean basically, probably, the Jewish financiers that we talk about so much, and international Jew, being a big, you know, of the leading people in this. But it is something that they are, affiliated with every country that is, you know, in the Western Hemisphere at least, and a lot of Middle Eastern countries and so on. And they have a lot of influence in those. And and the Obama administration is definitely answering to this globalist government. So the Obama administration is not independent, with Mr. Barack Obama being a real president of a real country and making the decisions and all by himself, lonely in his Oval Office and so on. I mean, that's impossible. And his cabinet is such a bunch of, I don't know what. So you can't believe that these people are running all this or making all these decisions. They're not. But, okay. So this is a battleground for the globalist forces. Now, you think this is just conspiracy nuttiness?
Well, I don't believe in conspiracies that require large numbers of people to keep a secret. I also especially don't believe in conspiracies that require large numbers of non-Jews to keep a secret. When you suppose something like that,
which is the kind of conspiracy theory that William Cooper used to peddle, and which has been taken up by Alex Jones and some other people. You're really creating an alibi for Jews.
Well, that's what you're worried about. And now that's what a lot of people
think. Well, I'm worried about it.
Well, what I think is that you politicize it. You say, well, this is going to help my enemies, and I don't want that, so I don't want to see it that way. Where what we should be doing is just taking any particular event and looking for the truth in it, and not worry about who it's going to help or hinder or not hinder in the long run. Like with Sandy Hook, if you say, well, let's see, if we think it's this, then that's going to help these people, and I'm not for these people. And I know this goes on both sides, but I don't think that I'm saying anything that some of these, what you called patriotards, are saying, where they really get crazy, people like Henry Mackow, and there's lots of things being repeated. There are a lot of things that I've already realized are that sounded convincing in the beginning, lots of these so-called anomalies about Sandy Hook, that I have realized are not what these people are saying they are, and they're not, they're not part of the anomalies. But these people just keep repeating it over and over, and a lot of people, because they haven't studied it deeply enough, and so they read this and they like it, and they keep repeating it, then they don't want to retract it. But I don't think I'm doing that. I think everything that I've said has a lot of validity to it so far, what I've said so far.
I think there's a very good reason for being much, much more skeptical about a conspiracy involving voluntary members who join an organization versus members of an ethnic minority.
I think you're looking at this wrong, because I know what you're saying, that you have to have some unifying, a very strong unifying thing to be a part of to lie about things like this. But I think most of these people, I think there's not a large number of people, and that most people are convinced of what part they're playing in it. And they don't know that much about it, and they're not in a position to, they're not the kind of people who are going to question it. And it may be also that a lot of the people that we see are some type of actors, or, you know how to put on these roles, and that they are also convincing people who might be involved in it, but don't really know that much about it, and aren't the kind of people who would question it, and aren't really allowed to, because the news media is not going to talk to them, because they're told that they're not supposed to, and the police person is there, but maybe just the news people aren't going to do it. Because one thing that is, if you take all the journalists, so-called journalists, they only do what they're told to do, and they've even said so, a lot of them. If they try to do stories that their editors don't want, and those editors can only do what their bosses tell them they can do or what they want, they go up the line, they're just discarded, or they're changed, or whatever. And most of these people are so used to that, I guess, that they don't say anything because they want to keep their job. And it's gotten to where when they make the economy so bad, they make people more disinclined to jeopardize their jobs. I agree that it's very hard to explain things like this. And you say, well, it can't happen yet. I think that's trying to go too far ahead. I think we have to look at what's wrong with the picture, and talk about that, and question it seriously, and not jump ahead to, well, but how could this happen? Because all these people wouldn't go along, wouldn't keep their mouth shut, and you can't keep a secret, and all this stuff. That's the wrong approach, and that's what the disinfo people are always pushing us into.
Well, I think that's a valid argument.
Because it's just a generalization. When we talk about the why they would have a crime scene like this and not let anybody ever see anything, any proof of it. You're supposed to. I think another thing is that they want to accustom as many of us as possible to accepting that when we're told what happened by television, and this was quite another television kind of extravaganza, not like 9/11, but it was still an extravaganza. So it was all on TV. When we're told and the government says and the police say that, you just accept it and you don't ask to see evidence. Who are you to ask to see evidence? They say, oh, we can't show you this. And they give you the reasons, and they always have to do with emotional things about the victims or the, you know, people involved and so on. And we're gotten more and more willing to accept this. And I think this is part of what they're trying to do, get people to be comfortable with accepting things that they aren't told anything about.
Okay, so we have to believe. How many people do we have to believe are in on the conspiracy here? Apparently, a large number of policemen. And who else?
You know, it doesn't. You know, I don't know how many policemen were in there. Most of them were outside, you know, so I really don't know. But we don't have too much time left in this, and then we might get some phone calls after the first hour, in the second hour. So I don't think that we can solve that, you know, by saying, well, how many? Because I could ask you questions that you can't answer, and you can ask me questions that I can't answer. And so, but it's the whole point that I would like to make is that, are these things happening in, you know, in our domestic sphere in order to influence the way we as Americans think and therefore influence our behavior, according to objectives that the current administration or the current global, you know, government has? And we know that their, would you deny that their agenda is to disarm the American people as much as possible?
There are certainly some people, especially Jews, that cherish that agenda.
Well, you know, I would say the authorities who want to be an authority and not have any resistance cherish that agenda, would go along with that agenda. And you might be able to talk people into going along with the phony agenda by saying it's for a good purpose because, you know, it make our job easier as police not to have all these people out there with guns, and we'd be the only ones that had them. You could present that in a way that would make people like that. Now, I'm looking for my, see if there's anything more here that, talk about how they use Hollywood. Now here, see, there's some good stuff here I need to say. Okay, I did that part. All right, they say fictive, in this article by this George guy, fictive or fictional operational environments then, whether mass targeted or niche targeted, can be generated, transmitted, distributed, or broadcast by governments on all sorts of players through increasingly diversified networks. Now, he's already talking about fictive or fictional. He says, let us take just one example. This was up above here. Okay, I got to read this. Many people suspect that the National Command Authorities, this was NCA, okay, are in danger of becoming increasingly reactive to a fictive universe created by CNN, its various international competitors, or even a terrorist with a video camera. This media-created universe we live in is fictive rather than fictional because although what we see on CNN is true, in quotes, it is just not the whole, relevant, or contextual truth.
Yeah, that's an important point right there because with 14,000 murders occurring in the United States every year, more than 14,000, some of those are going to be incidents that can be played up to serve a particular agenda, and therefore it's not really necessary to fabricate incidents. You have things like the James Byrd dragging death. That was just
played up and.
They got law out of that. They passed laws because of that. They passed hate laws.
They passed laws.
This might be real too, but what they're saying is that you can confuse fiction and reality, which is what I think is probably the answer to Sandy Hook. But it's fictionalized reality. Well, we have that, and even in these Holocaust survivor books. So you get it confused and you put both of them together, and what you have is kind of true, but it's not really the whole truth. So this fictive universe becomes the politically relevant universe in which the government or the armed forces are supposed to do something. That is, you know, things are taking place, and so now they need to do something, like pass some new laws to stop this from happening again, supposedly. Uh-huh. You know, just like have to mention how all the wars, all the wars that we fought, like in World War II and World War I, were both wars to end war, you know, but all you get is more war afterwards. So this idea that if you do something to stop things from ever happening again, let's do something so this never can happen again. Yeah.
Little then kids we'll have a perfect get. World.
Yeah, and then it'll be just even worse, because if you actually took the guns from people, that's a terrible, at least enough people are able to describe what awful things would happen.
The old bumper sticker was, if guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns.
Yeah, and that's true. And the police and the authorities will have guns, they'll really be scary. So all anybody has to do is tell you what to do, and you got to go do it, because you don't have any choice. Well, Hadding and listeners, we have just a few more seconds before we're going to have our music. Here it is, and we'll be back in 5 minutes and hope that I can cover some more of this stuff that I wanted to cover. And I welcome your phone calls.
Es ist einer dieser Tage, an dem wir bei Oma sind. Es duftet nach Kuchen und Kaffee. Wir lauschen ihren Worten, ihre Tränen sind nicht zu übersehen. Wenn sie von Oma erzählt, sie alle gingen damals einen schweren Gang, und ich schaue auf die Bilder an Omas Wand. Opa, ich vermisse dich, und ich glaube fest daran, egal was man auch erzählt, du warst ein guter Mann. Die Oma sagt, du warst ein Held und gabst dein Leben für das Land. Ihre Tränen lügen nicht, und zu gern hätte ich dich gekannt. Erzählt von einer Zeit, für uns unvorstellbar, geprägt von Tränen, Glück und Leid. Und immer wenn sie Opa sah, klingt ihre Stimme seicht und warm. Sie schließt ihre Augen und sie fällt schlafen in meinen Arm. Sie alle gingen damals einen schweren Gang, und ich schaue auf die Bilder an Omas Wand. Opa, ich
vermisse dich und ich glaube fest daran, egal was man auch erzählt, du warst ein guter Mann, die Oma sagt, du warst ein Held und gab sein Leben für das Land. Ihre Tränen lügen nicht und zu gern hätte ich dich gekannt. Opa, ich vermisse dich und ich glaube fest daran, egal was man auch erzählt, du warst ein guter Mann. Die Oma sagt, du warst ein Held und gab sein Leben für das Land. Ihre Tränen lügen nicht und zu gern hätte ich dich gekannt.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Heretics Hour on Monday, January 14th. And I'm here, Carolyn Yeager, with Hadding Scott, and we are discussing, are we being psyoped? Do we live in a world of kind of continual psyops of one kind or another? That is psychological operations going on against us to change our thinking and via the use of television and movies. And now here in the last paragraph of what I had been reading, and listeners, by Professor George Stein, his 1995 essay on information warfare, he says, and this is the most important part for me, let us take just one example of how current technologies could be used for strategic-level information warfare. If, say, the capabilities of already well-known Hollywood technologies to simulate reality, were added to our arsenal, a genuinely revolutionary new form of warfare would become possible. Today, the techniques of combining live actors with computer-generated video graphics can easily create a, quote, virtual, unquote, news conference, summit meeting, or perhaps even a battle that would exist in effect, though not in physical fact. Stored video images can be recombined or morphed endlessly to produce any effect chosen. This moves well beyond traditional military deception, and now perhaps pictures will be worth a thousand tanks. Now, here's where we come into this. In 1995, he is saying we have the techniques of combining live actors with computer-generated graphics and backgrounds and so on and creating all kinds of things that look perfectly real, a virtual reality. And we are so used to living and believing and getting everything from these images, computer, whether, you know, whatever, visual sources for things, and having seen people talking to us, telling us things. And now we have people like Martin, who was on 2 weeks ago saying, and a lot of others saying that they think this is all, a lot of this is created, computer generated images and people that they're showing us, and we think it's all real, and they're able to do this. And I know that to us, we say, oh, we can't see how that could be possible, but we're way behind what they have available in technology.
Well, if that was, that technique was shown off very ostentatiously in Forrest Gump, where you had Tom Hanks shaking hands with John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, but you could do it. Yeah, okay. All right.
And shaking hands with Lyndon Johnson and so on. And some people, I think even David Irving suggested this possibility. Some people think that the famous Osama bin Laden banquet video where he supposedly talks about how they planned the 9/11 attacks was some kind of computer-generated thingy. And I don't know.
Well, I think so. Yeah. I think so.
Well, it's certainly a suspicious thing since they can't really give a credible explanation of how they discovered that. We found it. All right. Okay. They had a good time making fun of that. There's a French program where they have puppets that look like various political figures called, I think it's Le Guignol or something like that. And they made fun of that in.
Well, you know,
TV.
any intelligent, discerning people who have critical thinking minds, and I have to include myself there because I don't believe any of this. I don't believe any of this stuff, and I never believed any of these Osama bin Laden videos and so on. And then they went from when they ran out of those acting ones, they just started using still pictures of him, and then he had him talking because they, you know, and. It's just, you know, there was none of that is believable. But yet, look at all the people who still believe it only because, for the very reason you were giving, they say, oh, I can't understand how they could get away with something like this.
Well, see,
therefore,
that's
they
very
can't
different.
Be doing it.
That's
no, it isn't. It's the same
it
principle.
It is very different. Who would be in a position to say that the Osama bin Laden banquet video is fake?
Only what about all the people that are, well, there's got to be a lot of people involved in doing that, all these people who work for intelligence and so on. All these people in intelligence, are they also such rotten, no-good traitors that they, although they, again, you could use the, you could, they could believe that this is all for a good cause. This is for the security of the United States of America. And we have to tell people this for whatever reason they're given.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be a large number of people involved in fabricating a fake video like that.
Well, you're right. That's not the same as the big event itself. But still, I just would like to point out that when this man in 1995 said that they had the technique of combining this computer-generated and with actors, and you pointed to the Forrest Gump movie, which might have been around that time, and I would like to bring up in conjunction with this in back to the Holocaust again. It doesn't hurt at all to get people aware of how this, you know, well, okay, I've been talking about all the fake, photographs and, hoaxy photographs from, that are supposed to prove, the Holocaust. And this has been known for a long time and people have been talking about these for a long time. And yet, people, some of the ones that I've shown recently on Elie Wiesel Kahn's World, some people say, did they have this ability back then in 1945 or whatever? Were they didn't have Photoshop then. They weren't able to do this. Well, you know, what they had was so beyond, they probably had then what we are aware of now and maybe more. Because they're always way ahead of us. And by the time the technology comes to the public, they're already done in their way on some.
Well, you don't have to make that argument, because the fact is that there were lots of ways to use real footage in a misleading manner in the 1940s. I can give you a very good example. Frank Capra's Why We Fight series, which was produced by the U.S. Army, for the U.S. Army Signal Corps, with a number of Jews participating in the writing and direction also, and also shown to civilians, and has been shown over and over on UHF television stations ever since, as if it were accurate history. There's one episode of Why We Fight called, it's about China. It's about the Japanese in China, Battle for China or something like that. And there's one particular scene in there that shows two
Chinese people with their hands tied behind their back being made to kneel in front of a ditch, and then two men with rifles shoot them in the backs and they fall in the ditch.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't show you the whole frame of that. The footage is real, but you see, you don't see the heads or the faces of the people holding the guns and shooting in Capra's documentary. Now, somebody dug up the original footage and proved that it was the same footage, and that Capra had cropped the frames so that you couldn't see the heads on the soldiers that were doing the shooting. They were not Japanese soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
They were nationalist Chinese soldiers shooting communists. And this is the kind of thing that was done.
They do a lot of it. I mean, there's a whole lot of that.
This was the kind of thing that was done to create misleading footage, to use real film footage in a misleading manner, and to solidify the impression that these were Japanese soldiers, which you couldn't tell from because their heads were out of the frame. He had what was probably an actor dressed as a Japanese officer shout an order, and that's spliced in between when they put the prisoners down by the ditch and the shots are fired. So that's how they did it back then. That's really just as effective as morphing somebody's head to look like Forrest Gump or whatever. It's just as effective because people aren't going to question it.
Well, right. All these things are effective. And in fact, did I already read that a part like that, or is this something coming up here? But you know that they mixed the real with the fiction, and there's all kinds of ways to do that. And generally, that is the way it's done because they know that it's more effective and credible that way, because they can kind of prove that some of it, so that's a very popular way of doing things. And I think that I'm kind of partial in this Sandy Hook thing to the idea that it got involved with the drill, that this drill, why was this drill going on only 20 miles away for children, the very thing that was happening at Sandy Hook, and kind of strange. I mean, odd coincidence, how many coincidences can you have? And that this thing got started, and it didn't take, it wasn't everything that they say it is now, but something happened there. But how to explain all that, it's really tough because they plan these things out, they make them difficult, and they make a lot of, and I also think, but I don't want to, I've said this before, that they put out a lot of this false information, which people will talk about, and then they change it, and then they change it, and then it's like, well, people are saying things that aren't true, and it gets all confusing. So that's all planned out, too. And they also plan on the kind of controlled opposition people that will be put out there to talk about it and keep directing attention in places that won't go anywhere.
Well, maybe Lanza heard about the concern over possible school shootings, and it gave him the idea.
Well, I don't think he's the culprit. How many of these things, they always have the patsy. It's never the person they say it is. I know, though, however, with you, you don't go along with that. You think that these people who did these things are the real guilty party. Now, you don't still think that, what's that guy's name who supposedly killed Jack Kennedy?
Lee Harvey Oswald?
Yeah, you don't still think he's actually the lone gunman, do you?
Well, one of those guys that was in the Nixon administration made some kind of deathbed confession, didn't he?
What's his name? No, he was a famous spy or something. He'd been talking a lot and all. And yeah, supposedly he made a deathbed confession. And he was supposedly one of the people in the killing party, wasn't he? I wish I could think of his name, but there was a whole crew that was doing that. There was a whole crew. I mean, there's so many things. We can't talk about that, but it's never the person they say it is. And they say that right away. The same way, what they blamed it on Osama bin Laden immediately. the whole 9/11 thing. They had him numbered, you know, within hours. And the same with this guy. They came out with his name, you know, in an hour. Of course, they said he was laying there dead, but, you know, we don't see any pictures of him. So, well, the OWI is the Office for War Information, which doesn't exist anymore. It was, created in 1942 for World War II, and it did a lot of things. And then, in fact, this one is more interesting than the one about the general, government psyops and military psyop operations. But this is, they say they, you know, they ended it in 45 or 46, but, they just transferred it. It's to the State Department, and which became the CIA. So whatever they were doing, it just, you know, moved somewhere else. Didn't have that name. But it was run by this Elmer Davis, who was a CBS newsman. Yeah. He was the director. And how often, Hadding, do they use people, journalist people, for these things? And because that's basically what it's all about. It's all about putting out news that, you know, is false and people will believe. And they also recognize the importance of Hollywood and the movie industry. Also, there's a thing, I've got a thing here, there's a Jew, Norman Corwin, he produced a radio series. He produced a lot of radio programs for them and other programs, wrote them. He produced An American in England and An American in Russia. I guess these were documentaries, and A Passport for Adams, which starred Robert Young, you know. And so they get these news people and movie people to do this stuff, as you mentioned just a minute ago. But Corwin was a son of parents who were observant Jews, Orthodox Jews, and his father lived until 110 and attended Holy Day services until his death. But Corwin even said that while he wasn't an observant Jew, his work was infused with the ideas of the Hebrew prophets quite a bit. So, you know, you always find these people. You're right. You find, you know, if you look hard enough, you find that they're Jewish. But the idea of where's the movie part here? And then they wanted to the Bureau of Motion Pictures was formed under OWI to network with Hollywood. Every film had the opportunity to diminish or enhance America's war effort and America's reputation abroad. And Davis said the easiest way to, this Elmer Davis, who was the director, said the easiest way to inject a propaganda idea into most people's minds is to let it go through the medium of an entertainment picture when they do not realize that they are being propagandized.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know that's true.
Oh, yeah, I've seen so much. I haven't watched television in years, but last time I watched any television, I saw so much drama on there that was just poisonous.
Oh, yeah. Poisonous. It's awful. I don't know what it is either. You know, and so I don't, if I watched that stuff, I would really be depressed. I think I'd be so depressed. This word demoralization, it's hard not to be demoralized, and that's probably why so many people cannot stand up against this stuff. Only a very few, and not enough to do anything really important about it. But I've been watching a lot of news things on YouTube and so on. And like this Anderson Cooper, he really depresses me. When I watched that full thing where he was attacking this James Tracy, who's been asking all these questions, he's a professor in a Florida university, and he does a very good scholarly-type job, you know, professorial-type job of asking all the questions and pointing everything out. He's a kind of a media studies professor.
I think he's a professor of communications, isn't he?
Yeah, but he teaches a course like in conspiracy, and he's written about a lot of these so-called things that are people, you know, 9/11 and JFK and lots of things and how they panned out and so on in the media. And he tries to teach critical thinking to his students, you know, which is tough. Where was I going with this? I don't even, I've lost my thread. Anderson Cooper just spent a half hour show that he has, I guess, every evening or something called 360 or something. And, he went after this Tracy on this show. He's very vicious. And he had a couple of Jewish guys who were, you know, talking about it. One from Salon.com and the other one from, this Jonathan Kay. Where's he from? I don't know. Anyway, he's well known. That depressed me because, you know, that's what's on television. And, I thought, gosh, you know, that's really hard to, you know, these people are put this stuff out all over. It's hard to answer. And, you know, they were going after this guy's job. Anderson Cooper was telling people that he shouldn't be allowed to be a professor at this university. And he gave his name and his position and all this information about him. I want you all to write to, Florida Atlantic University and say that you want this guy to be fired. I mean, he didn't put it in those words, but it was just awful. And this is what's on TV. And talk about now. Anderson Cooper is he graduated from Yale University. Yale University is known to be the one of the main government connected universities, along with Harvard, but Yale even more so, I guess. And lots of people go from Yale to CIA, like George Bush Sr. And he went into the CIA. But after a few years, he was still in kind of a training program or something. He decided he didn't want to. He wanted to be a journalist. So he went into journalism. Well, he's still with the CIA, if you ask me. And this is the collusion I want to point out that most people who are in the know understand, but the general public doesn't understand that the media is simply an arm of intelligence agencies, basically.
Well, I think if you say that the mass media are an arm of the government, that's not entirely true.
You said intelligence agencies. I think they're more wrapped up in. There's a lot of intelligence. There's a lot of people. Well, what would you say? People in intelligence who go and take over communications networks and so on.
The real power is in the mass media because the mass media can determine who gets elected. However, if there is one particular media outlet that's bucking the trend that other media outlets support, that one could end up having a hard time. For example, I know that I wrote about this a year or so back about how what happened at MSNBC with Pat Buchanan. A few months before Pat Buchanan was fired, Cenk Uygur, who hosts The Young Turk on the internet, he'd had a job at MSNBC, and the head of MSNBC told him that people in Washington contacted him and made suggestions that Cenk Uygur needed to tone down his program. You know, so the government will make suggestions to media, and if they don't go along with their suggestions, I suppose they could have a news channel might have difficulty getting embedded reporters or something like that when there's a war going on. There are ways that the government can retaliate for lack of cooperation, I'm sure. But on the other hand, back when Nixon was president, the media really went after him. It depends to a large extent on what the consensus of the mass media is, I think. If most of the mass media support the government, then the one outlet that bucks that trend is probably going to have a hard time, I guess. And, of course, most of the mass media are dominated by Jews.
Well, sure.
You could say
maybe
all of them. And
they dominate the government, too. So they're actually pretty much running everything now in the United States.
The Jewish direct control over the government is not as strong as control over mass media, because the mass media are private. There are lots of people in the government that are not Jews. There are lots of non-Jews in the government. Therefore,
they don't have the power. They just do, they're just bureaucrats, basically. And some of them, most of them who are like cabinet heads and so on, they're chosen because they go along with all that stuff. They're not going to rock the boat. And if you don't mind, I looked and we've got an email from someone, and I want to read it because it might have been here for a while. This is from Carl, and I don't think we have the answers to his questions, but he says these are the kind of questions that people are asking, but there's no answers to them. But if the children depicted at Sandy Hook were not real, are the police per household stopping people from saying that they have no child or no child is there? How do the police at each victim house fit into the media fiction theory? Well, I'm not totally into the media fiction theory, see. As I've said, if Martin were on, Martin would be, have to answer that. I don't know how he would answer it. But that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't say that these people didn't have children in school and the children are gone. I brought up to you, Hadding, some time back that this pedophile thing, pedophile rings, and when they do things like this with children, if they don't really kill these children, they take them off into these pedophile rings. And you just laughed at me. You said, oh, God, that's really... but, I mean, that is one answer, but, I don't know. I don't know. Most of the parents have not said anything. The ones that are supposed to be parents, they haven't said anything. Only a few, as I've said before, you see a few families, that's it. And you could say, well, they're the only ones who are willing to say anything, and the others don't want to. And that could be true. So, these are questions that can't be answered, and the media and the so-called journalism or the police or anybody nobody's making any effort. Of course, they're saying that they're real. That's why they wouldn't be answering that question. Well, you want to comment on that?
Well, I'm not sure what his point was. One way to take his question is to point out how complicated it is to perpetuate a fraud on such a scale. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can't answer that question, and I'm not. That's why I wouldn't say that they're not real, because I couldn't explain that at all. Now, if they have such advanced media manipulation as to make up total things and put them on TV and so on and convince the world, as Martin was saying, was suggesting, then I guess they would find a way to do all that, but I don't know about that, and it's hard to imagine that they're doing that. But if that possibility exists, Hadding, and we know that they have very advanced technology that we know nothing about, we wouldn't know what they have. They're not just working with Photoshop. There's that. Now, I want to remind people that they can call at 1-830-443-4911 if they should so desire. Now, I want to go on with this thing about the motion picture industry. Now, did I lose my place here? I said that they... as I've said, when people go to movies, that's when they really take in stuff, even more than at home on their television set, because they can get up and move around and do this and that and talk while that's going on. In the movie theater, they're just,
Drama, drama was really invented as a kind of religious ceremony in ancient Greece. It was part of a religious festival. where they would stage the dramas, and it was to convey some kind of message, really. And it still has some of that purpose today. It, people derive what they think are profound messages from dramas. They take it to heart. They really do.
That's right.
Especially if they go and sit in a dark theater with a bunch of other people. It's a, it's like going to some kind of religious ceremony.
Yeah, or a seance or something. I mean, you're just, you know, when you when I used to go to movies, and I liked going by myself because I didn't want to chat and, you know, I just, and you know, it starts and you're like, okay, here it is. And you're just ready. You're just totally passive, you know, ready to see what they're going to offer you. And all this subliminal stuff that's in them, I do believe there are subliminals in movies and in TV. Why wouldn't there be? You think these people are not taking advantage of every everything they have going for them? And, you know, you think, oh, they couldn't do this. Somebody's watching over this and preventing this from happening. That's not true. Anyway, they say in July, whatever, July 1942, the Office of War Information found the best way to have an effect upon Hollywood was to be present during the production of feature films. So most of the studios, except for Paramount, they say, by 1943, allowed them to read all the movie scripts and to see that they were, you know, had helped the American war effort or whether they didn't or whatever, and to, you know, take their suggestions. And they said the result of the OWI being there, this person said, was the movie Little Tokyo, USA, which showed a complete intolerance for Japanese Americans. Well, you just take what they did in wartime and just then, you know, direct it to what they would be doing now to us, their own, you know, supposedly their own people. But they don't think of us as their own people. That's the one thing we need to realize. You know, in a globalist thinking, and our governments are globalist, are signed up with globalism, whether you want to think they're part of the Bilderberg or whatever, they're signed up with globalism, and that's their agenda too. And so they're not interested in our welfare any more than anybody else's. They're interested in their global agenda, which is to make us less powerful and less free and more enslaved to whatever they would want us to do. I mean, can you disagree with that?
Less powerful in what sense?
In our personal, you know, decision making and so on, that we would just be, you know, reduced to more and more to feeling like, well, to this big brotherism. It's a big brother thing. Just, you know, it's all, sometimes it sounds corny because, you know, it's been talked about for so long. And we all know about George Orwell's 1984, and yet what's happening and the protocols, if I might bring them up, we say, oh, that's all old stuff, but yet everything is following along those lines because it's not exactly like it was in 1984, but you know, it's the same process, the same principle, and we don't recognize how much we've lost. And young people, like I said, on Saturday, this Russian KGB agent said that it takes all they need is 15 to 20 years to educate, totally bring up one whole generation in the way that they want them to think, and then they've got things under control. Except it's true that people sneak out under that thing. You can't really affect everybody. That there are people who don't go along with it. And so it's not as easy as all that. But
well, you know, that's a complicated question. Freedom. I think if you don't have any money in this society today, you basically don't have any freedom, or you have very limited freedom. Free trade has probably taken away a lot of the freedom that people used to have, because if you don't have a job, you don't have freedom. If you don't have a job, you end up being dependent.
Well, yeah. You know? So, you know, you can bring it around to that, your political views and why that's not the right way. But I would agree with you. But for this purpose, we do want to talk, You know, we do want to hold up freedom as being something that we care about, because under this globalist agenda, we're just not going to have the kind of rights that Americans are used to. We're just not going to have them. And they know that there's tremendous resistance to this, and there's awareness of this. And so that's why I say they are using various psyops one after another. And I think it makes a lot of sense that these recent killings and shootings from even maybe the one in Norway are part of this agenda to get us to thinking that there's these crazy people who want to go out and get these guns and shoot up a bunch of, especially when it's kids. We just can't let that happen, because it has to be something strong enough. Just ordinary killing people is not going to do it. That's why they went to this Sandy Hook thing, I think, finally. This is the cream on top of the pie or whatever of what they've been doing lately, because they're these 6 and 7 year old kids in their school classrooms, you know. I mean, it's just, people are just horrified by it, and it's so emotional. So that's why they went to such an extreme, and I think it's a psyop. I think it's a psyop.
I don't think the government needs to do a special. If you, by psyop you mean a staged event, I don't think the government needs to stage events in order to find events that it can use for its purpose. Or for the mass media, that the mass media can use for the Jewish agenda. Because, I don't like to characterize the government as the seat of whatever agenda is being pushed.
Well, I know, you know, but explain, because, you know, that's because you're thinking about a good government. You're thinking about a national socialist government. You're thinking about a nationalist government, and you don't want government to be seen as the enemy. I agree with you. But we don't have, talking about globalist governments, they're different, and they think differently. And, you know, you can't just say government. And I'm glad you bring that up, because I think we should distinguish that. I don't think all governments are bad. If we had a nation that was, you know, in a nationalist group of people, and we decided on a government, I think we should follow the government, and we could have a good government. But you can't, because of that's another reason for immigration and all this third world immigration, all this multiracialism, because then you don't have people who want the same thing, and you've got conflict, and it doesn't work.
Another trend that's tending toward reducing freedom. There are a lot of trends that have nothing to do with direct exertion of government power that are tending toward reduction of freedom. As a matter of fact, it's the absence of government that's allowing these things to happen. The absence of government curbing imports and preserving jobs for American workers. The absence of government preventing foreigners from coming into the country.
Yeah,
that's where the real problem is. In some ways, I think a military dictatorship would be a huge improvement over this constitutional republic that people like to think is so wonderful.
Well, because it's a total fraud. I mean, what we have is people put in under a globalist agenda. This is not our government. You know, we don't have any choice in who the people who end up running for president or any of these offices. You know, they manage to weed out the people they don't want, and they only offer you the people that that they do. And this is just the same as what was in, we used to laugh about how it was in communist Russia, you know, when they had elections, but they only had the same people of the same party running. Well, we might as well have people of the same party. And I forget now what you said right before we got onto this, but it fit in with something I wanted to mention. And it was about, who is our enemy? You said government's not our enemy. Shouldn't be our enemy. No, and you could have a good government and wouldn't be, and then that would be a strengthening of your country. But talking about who the enemy is, talking about needing to do this anti-terrorist stuff and so on, that the study was done of, I think I've got this right. 300 detention facilities were built in the United States. And, well, no, that's a separate thing. We've got 300 detention facilities, some people say, that have already been built by FEMA in the United States. You know, who are they for? And then there's this, but because supposedly there's a fear of terrorists and they're going to put terrorists in these things or whatever. But this fusion, there were some, I don't know what fusion is, but there are 680 fusion center reports because there's these fusion centers or something, studies. And in a Senate committee did a study, looked into this, and between 2009 and 2010, there was not one single terrorist threat reported. Okay, this is supposed to be having all this fear of terrorism in this country and all this stuff we have to do. Oh, that's what I'm talking about, these drills. So we have all these terrorist drills and so-called drills in our schools and in our towns. And that's what this drill was going on, you know, in this Bridgeport next to Newtown. Yet when they actually will come out with the study, when they look at it, there was not a single terrorist threat reported from these centers or whatever in that 1 year of 2009 and 10. And yet they want us to believe that we're threatened by terrorism. And of course, people who were talking about this were saying the government is the enemy. You know, the kind of government that we have, these globalist run governments are our enemy, along with media.
The government as such is not the enemy. The problem that we have is that the decisive influence over what the government does comes from mass media as a whole. And Jews control that. That's the problem.
Well, that's a good point. But it still remains that our governments are not our governments, and they're not good governments because they've been put in place by what the media dictates, the Jewish media. And I agree that at the top of all this, the most influential people are the Jews, and it's basically a kind of a Jewish agenda. But you have to recognize, and because people point out, that there are non-Jews who are participating.
Well, you get some participation of non-Jews in these things, but, you know, for example, I used to know a woman that had worked for NBC, and she was not a Jew. She was Armenian, actually. And she had some stories about how news editing went at NBC.
Oh, I bet.
And, you know, but the thing is about biased news reporting is there's nothing there that's illegal or would make a big scandal. It's all pretty subtle. And you know, you couldn't really get the world's attention by exposing any particular instance of it. You know, it's too subtle. It's not that dramatic the way faking a shooting incident would be. That would be very risky to do.
Well, they do risky things, and I think most people who would be listening to us now and will be listening to this program probably, because we don't have listener, the people who are far, you know, don't think like this at all are not, don't listen to the White Network programs, I don't believe, but they wouldn't listen for long if they started listening to it probably. But the people who do listen, I think would disagree that they don't do these risky things, and they do a slop. They don't do a perfect job, and that's why we see through them. But because of media repetition and so on, and the general programming people get, they can't deal with it, and they won't listen to it, and they don't want to believe that it's staged. They don't want to believe these things are staged, even though the evidence is all there. And I think the evidence is compelling.
When you assume that this kind of very risky thing is done, you also have to assume along with that the vast conspiracy of non-Jews going along with it. And that can mean that the whole government is filled with a conspiracy that's mostly not Jews.
It doesn't have to be vast, Hattie. That's the argument people make who don't know much about it. It doesn't have to be a vast participation. And there is this thing that's been talked about a lot about different compartmentalization. Different people have bits of knowledge, and they play their part and so on. And everybody is just doing their job. And we know how common that is. I mean, you know, anytime you have a job, I couldn't say that I would be a hero and come out and jeopardize my job back when I had jobs I wanted to keep. But of course, I didn't have anything like that going on that I knew of. And I wasn't aware even then. So I wouldn't say that I would be a hero. I don't think too many people would. And I think some of these people who are called whistleblowers might be part of the controlled opposition. It's all, you know, this is where they really make it difficult, because they sprinkle and infect the general, you know, those who are questioning it, with people who are really working to keep it covered up. So now here, the Central Intelligence Agency, just let me throw this in here real quick. The role that it plays, you know, it just kind of evolved out of World War II from programs they had then. And one thing that I found important in this thing that's written about it, the formulation of national psychological warfare policy in time of national emergency and the initial stages of war. So the CIA can get involved in domestically when they're in national psychological warfare activity when there's a national emergency. And you know how the president is able to call a national emergency whenever he wants, or she, when it's going to be a she one of these days soon. And then another thing about the Central Intelligence Agency is that plans prepared by this organization for overt psychological warfare in time of national emergency or the initial stages of war. And are we supposed to be in a state of war right now, or do they say we're not? I don't know. Shall provide for what?
I think that we're to some extent we're experiencing the effects of being at war, because there are things like you can't get away with. I'd say that there's a little bit less tolerance for free speech right now than there was before September 11th, 2001, and this is a consequence of us being, roughly speaking, at war, vaguely speaking, at war. There's a sort of lingering low-level panic that's still going on and maintained. And well, if we would bring all the troops home, then the free speech would go back to what it was before, and the government probably couldn't get away as easily with making suggestions to mass media about which shows they should air and so forth.
Well, you know, I don't think they want to bring all the troops home. I don't think they intend to ever bring all the troops home. They have to have us involved somewhere so that they can have enemies and have, you know, terrorism threats and so on.
Well, the U.S. So, is going broke, so, you know.
Yeah, well, that's maybe
circus
the part.
Is coming
that
to an
may
end
be,
sometime.
Yeah, well, but I don't think that's going to be to our benefit. I think if the United States, like this Russian guy was saying that I talked about on Saturday, you know, you have demoralization, then you have destabilization of the nation, which we've gone through all that. And, you know, it's hard to really destabilize the United States of America, because we are isolated, so to speak. We don't have all these people and neighbors around us to, you know, break in and so on. But we're also been such a strong, stable nation. The U.S. has been so stable, but so it takes a long time. But I think we've been quite destabilized by now.
Well, it's the white majority in the United States that really counts. As soon as the white majority is no longer doing its thing.
Well, then we're going to have crisis. And then after crisis, you go back to this normalcy, which is like a communist state normalcy. You know, I mean, that's going to be the new normal. That's where we're headed. So if we have this crisis and we come apart, I don't think that people like us or other people who are like, you know, even libertarians or pro-gun people or people who want to just, you know, have freedom and so on. I don't think that they're going to be able to come out ahead. I don't think we're going to. They've already got this planned out, and we're going to be under a much worse regime when that happens. So I don't look forward to it.
Yeah, I don't think this is all planned that well. I think we have a lot of we have a lot of exploitation and
we know how World War II was planned. How these wars were planned. Now why wouldn't they be planning this stuff now? I mean, they're planning even better now. I mean, there's a lot of planning. I'm not saying everything goes according to their plan and things can't go wrong because they do, but they still plan it and they've got a huge plan. I mean, you just gotta realize that these people are smart. They're some of the, you know, that's how they got to where they are. They've got all kinds you know, they've got all kinds of money and everything to do with everything, all kinds of technology. They've got everything that exists in the world. They're in control of it.
Well,
and they got everything going for them.
Let me give you a specific thing. United States, in a few years, because of the annual deficits running around $1 trillion, in a few years, the United States is not going to be able to take care of the interest on its debts. Is that planned? Or
It might be that they think that's one way, because that's going to bring us down. They want to bring down the United States as an independent type of nation, you know, where it has some, you know, some right to a sovereignty. Okay, they want to take away the sovereignty. They've taken away people still think they're resisting it. But they're trying to destroy all the sovereignty of the European nations, and they need to destroy our sovereignty. And it's really difficult, as I was saying before, for this country, because this has been a very sovereign country, but no more. I think that's coming to an end.
I don't think it's really planned that the United States should get to the point of defaulting on its debt. I think this is a consequence of some Zionist Jews with a very narrow focus. They just want to rescue their Jewish state over there, and they'll do whatever it takes to do that, and they're not worried about what happens long term. They'll figure that out when it comes up, so far as the United States going to ruin. I think
You know, if it was just a few top Jews doing this, then the other people who you think aren't going along with this would be doing something about it, but they're not.
Well, the thing is, mass media support the Zionist Jews. They support that agenda.
Well, they'd be taking over mass media. Somebody would be doing something, and somebody would be saying things. They don't say anything. They don't complain.
Fox News is completely pushing that agenda. The New York Times has supported it in a very strong way. The other networks, maybe a little less enthusiastically, but not very critical of it either.
Okay, well, they say with the CIA that I think these are what they're supposed to do or something. That in a national emergency or initial stages of war, their job is to coordinate overt psychological warfare with covert psychological warfare, censorship, and I guess control of domestic information. I'm not sure what that means. It just says domestic information. But so, you know, this is they do have a role that they're given domestically if needed. And the other thing that I want to stick in here, while I still can, is that our General Intelligence Agency, or the CIA at least, and that there's others, they are still on the books, not allowed to operate on American citizens domestically. They can only operate, you know, on foreign, but they can operate on friendly nations, on all our allies. They can go and do all their thing, you know, their And one of the big things they do is to place news articles and things, and probably on TV too, that give the say what they want to say and so on. That's one of the big things that they do. And they can carry out PSYOP operations in all the, any country. And therefore, these other countries can carry out PSYOP operations in the United States and legally. And since we're all connected, you know, with our allies or our friends, and with Israel as our friend, I could see where people would say, I could see where the Mossad would be used to come into the United States and carry out all of these PSYOP operations because it's legal for them. And we look the other way because that's basically what is being done when these things are going on, when these things are done. We, for some reason, U.S. authorities are looking the other way, not wanting to, and if they do pick up people, they let them go and so on. So maybe some of these charges that the Mossad is behind these things may be true in that sense, because I thought that was a pretty good thought I had.
Mike Harris, I think he's a lunatic.
Well, I do too, and he's not saying it the way I am. He's saying, "Oh, Mossad did this, Mossad did that." I wrote a comment against that just today on the White Network. Been writing a lot of comments, and I do want to also mention that I got a little testy today or yesterday. You know, it's part of this little bit of demoralization that I'm experiencing by being faced with all this stuff that's on TV and the way they do it, and I'm impatient with people who don't really get to look at it critically enough and get to the bottom of it and just want to jump to like this, that like the Mossad or like, oh, the Jews or this or that without saying why or being able to explain it. And they just pick that up, and I don't like it when there's too much of that. I don't think you're not doing it for that reason, but you are saying the same thing.
Well, I think we have plenty to contemplate if we just look at selective reporting and biased reporting. These are things that we can verify and prove and demonstrate.
Well, you can do that, Hadding, but the Sandy Hook thing still happened, and they're going after the guns because of it. So you can't ignore that and say, well, let's just go along and, you know, reasonably look at reporting and so on. I mean, you're kind of ignoring something that I think can't be ignored and shouldn't. You get the last word.
All you have really are just suspicions that there's something fishy there. You can't really demonstrate any of it. As far as biased reporting, selective reporting, and the fact that they've played up this story out of all proportion, those are things that are easy to demonstrate. And I prefer to argue based on what I can definitely show.
Well, all right. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. We could have continued and talked some more, but there's always more shows coming up. So tune in again next week and remember all the programs on the White Network. And I want to thank you, Hadding, for being willing to come on with me and keep me company today.
All right. Well, thanks for inviting me and putting up with my dissent.
Oh, that's fine. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you later. Good night.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.